From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
It's a beautiful Tuesday, and these are the glory days in New Mexico, right? I mean, unbelievable. I was watching the weather in my hometown of Michigan, and then Buffalo, like, whatever. And here we are with blue skies and no wind and just the happy days in New Mexico. I'm glad to be in studio today, filling in for Steve Ryman. And we have Dr. Stephen Collins with us and his from his office, my lovely wife, Larissa. We have a lot to talk about today. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Oh, Steve, love to have you here. It's an honor. You know, I'm a big fan of yours for many decades now, and I just want to turn the mic over to you and say, tell us stuff.
I can't say, well, Chip, if you're a fan of mine, you don't get around much, but I know you do. You're around the world more than I am.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But, Steve, you just came back from a conference in Boston called ASOR. Tell us about that.
Oh, ASOR. Well, ASOR used to stand for American Schools of Oriental Research, but the politically correct world decided a couple of years ago that the word Oriental is offensive to Asians.
I am offended by that. I want you to know.
Yeah, it's a whole interesting thing. But anyway, so they had to change the name, but they didn't want to give up ASOR, so they had to think of something. And I gave them a few suggestions, like the American Schools of Obnoxious Research or something like that. They decided on the American Society of Overseas Research.
Overseas. That doesn't narrow it down much.
Which is really a silly name, because a lot of the people who are members of ASOR live in the Near East or in Europe, and they're not overseas.
Right.
We're the ones that are overseas. So it's like, I don't understand it. You know, what people will go through to be politically correct is amazing to me. But anyway, ASOR is what it is now. It's the same organization. It just has different words associated with its acrostic. So that's it. Well, ASOR was in Boston, and the weather actually was pretty nice last week in Boston. And got to see a lot of colleagues. I haven't been to the live meeting. Now, I presented papers in the last two ASOR meetings. Both of those were virtual meetings. So we had virtual meetings and virtual sessions. But this year they're back to the live session, even though they had a virtual session. But there were so many people who were just sick of being home. So they all showed up. So we had probably 1,000, 1,500 people at this event. And this is an annual event. This is the annual meeting that they have every year in November, the week before Thanksgiving. And so it was really nice to see so many of our archaeological colleagues we haven't seen for a while, and to have some very important conversations, because these are the people that we rely on for doing a lot of our research and toward our publications, our final publications of the Tall Hammam Sodom material. And I presented a paper on Friday morning.
Nice.
First thing, they would have to put me at 8:20, right? In the first session, first out of the chute. I presented a paper called The Remarkable Middle Bronze Age II Destruction Layer at Tal el Hammam, which of course would be the destruction of the city of Sodom. Mm-hmm. And so, now that wasn't in the paper. I never said that, but people know, my views on this. So every one of them knows that that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about fire out of the sky.
Yes.
And the destruction of Sodom. It was interesting that, Haskell Greenfield, who is our, he's the guy at the University of Manitoba who's doing our bone analysis. Now, we sent those bones to him 2 years ago.
Yes.
But then COVID hit, and Canada shut down all their universities. He wasn't able to get back into his own lab at the university until just this last September.
Wow.
So there, he said, they're just now opening our boxes. We sent him three boxes of bones from the palace.
Bones that we excavate on site.
Yeah, we pick those bones out of the destruction layer.
Mm-hmm. Ship them back.
And, of course, you know, he is charging me, us, the dig, for all of this. He's not going to do it for free, for sure. And I've been asking him for 2 years what this is going to cost me, and he totally avoids the issue all the time. And, of course, I asked him, now, Haskell, and by the way, he's read our big airburst paper that came out a year ago. He's heard me talk about this. He's examined what I've presented on our destruction matrix, and he totally agrees. In fact, here's what he said to me. He said, since we have a Pompeii-ish style event, and he was at my paper and listened to what I had presented there as well last Friday. But he says, I said, well, what level of analysis? Because as an expert, he can do lots of analysis. He can do analysis, isotopic analysis on the DNA of the sheep or the goats or the donkeys or whatever they are. He can tell where they've been. He can tell if they were from Egypt or they came, you know, he can tell exactly where they've been their whole life. And so
amazing.
I said, well, since these are so mixed into the matrix, they're not found in working context, like kitchen, like a hearth, like a room where you would be preparing these things, preparing meat. They're mixed into the destruction matrix. The destruction was so violent in the last moment of Sodom that it just literally ripped everything to shreds. Animals, people, if it didn't incinerate them or if they're in a certain place, I'm sure some of them were even vaporized. And but we have lots and lots of bones mixed into the palace, and we were saying he was saying to me, well, maybe they didn't all come from the palace. Maybe that some of them came from the lower city, because it's all being blown to the northwest, to the northeast from the southwest. And so he's very well aware, and he's totally bought into this idea. I mean, he just understands the science and the description. And by the way, he's one of the top archaeologists working in the Near East today. He works at Gath, Gezer. And so everybody's bone analysis. And so I asked him, well, what level of analysis should we do for these bones since they're just so mixed into the matrix? He said, well, since we have this Pompeii-ish style event, we should do every kind of analysis we possibly can. And so when he said that, I saw a little, I didn't see stars. I saw dollar signs and all of this going, well, that sounds really expensive. And he just smiled. So, we have to pay experts to come in and do this kind of analysis for us, because I'm a ceramics expert, but I'm not a faunal expert. So we got to pay somebody to do that, and all kinds of other things, radiocarbon and lithics analysis and pottery, even comparing our people to come in who are experts in certain period pottery. They can compare what we find to other sites. And so that's the next go-round after this coming season, which is coming up starting in January. After the next dig season, then we have to start focusing on going toward final publications, because this will probably be our final field season. I mean, this is number 16.
Yes. It's a big deal.
It's a long, it's a big season coming up. We did lose two years to COVID. Yeah. And so, we put this year what is in essence a double season together. Mm-hmm. We're going to be in the field 9.5 weeks, almost 10 weeks.
Almost 10 weeks. Over 120 people.
Well, yeah. Dr. Collins, for the sake of our audience checking in right now, let's give them the elevator pitch. First of all, this is ABQ Connect, and this is Chip in studio with Dr. Stephen Collins and my wife, Larissa, his assistant, and we're talking about the discovery of Sodom. Dr. Collins is a world-class archaeologist with credentials that are extraordinary, but for the past 16 years, and then years before that pre-research, Dr. Collins, you have been digging in Jordan at a place you've determined is a proper site for biblical Sodom, as opposed to what was previously held was really out any facts in the south part of the Dead Sea. So give us just an over a 30,000 foot view of what you've been doing and where we're at.
Well, of course, if you were trying to find biblical Jerusalem, that might not be so difficult, right? Because you can drive there on the freeway today and it'll say, you know, Jerusalem next six exits or whatever. You know, everybody agrees. But when it came to Sodom, everybody had it in the wrong place. The problem is the Bible did give us a map. There is a map, a very clear map in Genesis chapter 13, first 12 verses. It lays out in very clear fashion where Sodom is located. In fact, that passage, I call it a primary passage because it was specifically written to take you to Sodom. And so we built a theoretical map based on that passage, and we knew where it should be.
Right.
We already knew ahead of time where it should be once we got on the ground for the first time about 20 years ago. We said, yes, this has got to be it. We found all the archaeological sites to be associated with Sodom and all the other cities. Now, some of them had been partially excavated, some have not. And Tal Hamam, the biggest one among those that we determined is the city of Sodom itself, had never been officially excavated at all. So that's what we've been doing the last 16 dig seasons, with counting the one we're heading into shortly. Amazing stuff. And we all always put it this way, you know, how do you find an ancient city, ancient biblical city that's lost? Well, if you have enough geographical indicators in the text, which we do, then you just want to find it in, go to the right place and find a city in the right time frame. Has to be from the time of Abraham in this case, and also way back in Genesis 10, talks about Sodom, so has to go back earlier than that. And then it has to be destroyed in the time of Abraham. And we have all that, all of that. It was actually destroyed by fire out of the sky. And that was kind of the point of my paper last Friday. Now, that my paper was a response to some criticism that came from the Nature Scientific Reports, big scientific paper that came out about a year ago. And by the way, that paper compared the Tal el-Hamam meteoritic cosmic airburst event that destroyed the city with the Tunguska, Siberia event in 1908.
How did that compare to Pompeii?
Of course, Pompeii is volcanic, whereas this is coming out of the sky. So this is a cosmic rock event burning up in the atmosphere, and that explosive plasmic material superheated that comes in and explodes upon the surface of the ground. Very similar to what happened in Tunguska in 1908. Where 2,500 square kilometers of Siberian forest were flattened in a blink of an eye. And so it's not volcanic like Pompeii, but it has directionality like Pompeii. Because directionality at Pompeii is easy because you see the volcano. It's like, there it is.
Yeah.
It's over there. Pompeii is here. We know which direction the pyroclastic flow came. Well, from our side, there's so many indicators of directionality. We know that this cosmic explosion came from the southwest and literally blew the city to the northeast.
Well, I think, Dr. Collins, those of us in the evangelical bubble may not realize is that outside the academic world, like they're just barely accepting David and Pilate, much less what you've discovered.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. If you're at ASOR, and most archaeological circles, if you mention that you take the Torah history, first five books of the Bible, if you take the Torah history seriously, you're going to be laughed at. Literally. I mean, you'll be ridiculed. You will be the butt of jokes. You might even be people try to discredit you. It's bad. It is that bad. Now, a lot of evangelicals in the archaeological community bailed on ASOR, on being a part of that archaeological group. But this is where most archaeologists are members. This is where they do their work. This is, they're all associated together. So we chose to stay and not necessarily fight it out, but just to stand our ground and to stand on the facts. And that, and we have managed a reasonable level of respectability. In fact, I've been asked numerous times to write chapters or publish in other people's books that are not people of faith. They just simply go with the archaeology. But the people in that session where I presented my paper last Friday on this directionality of the destruction layer at Tal Hamam, they got an earful, and they knew what I was talking about. I never said Sodom. Didn't have to say Sodom. They knew it. They knew it because they know that I think Tal Hamam is Sodom. And I'm talking about a Middle Bronze Age destruction layer. They know that's from the time of Abraham, and they know that that's what this all means. And when I flash a picture of the paper from Nature Scientific Reports, the front page of it up on the screen, if they haven't read it, they're at least seeing the title of it, and they know where this whole thing is going. I don't have to say Sodom. Now, by the way, that paper, that scientific paper, does say that they suspect that this event gave rise to the story of Sodom. That's what they say. And it's where that brought a lot of criticism in and of itself, because people just don't like, most archaeologists don't take the patriarchal narratives as history. They take them as fiction. And so you have to understand that. But you hold your ground and you just present the facts, you present the science. And by the way, that report, this is a really interesting. That Nature Scientific Reports article on Tal Hamam being destroyed by a meteoritic airburst, fire out of the sky, exactly as Genesis 19 says, that paper is now the most accessed, most downloaded and read scientific paper in the history of scientific papers.
Wow.
Right.
I mean, the numbers have just gone off the charts. I think it's pushing 750,000 downloads. Most scientific papers get downloaded, you know, a couple hundred times, 500-600 times, a few thousand times. No, this one has literally gone viral.
Well, you could be onto something here.
Yeah. So, and the amount of criticism that we've received I can count the hardcore critics on one hand who have vocalized their objection to this idea that this could be a real biblical event. Mm-hmm. And I know who they are. I know them, in fact. I don't just know who they are. I know them, and I've interacted with them in the past. Some of them I have actually given tours of the site to. Mm. But they're so adamant against using the Bible in an archaeological context that whenever you even suggest such a thing, they just really get beside themselves and they just can't think logically anymore. Their brain is just solidified so far to the left of denying biblical historicity that they just can't get past it. And so what do they do with this data? You can't deny the data. And this is so much fun now because you have to look at it and go, okay, what will I, as a liberal, do with this? There is a town, a huge one, big city state, exactly in the location that the Bible describes for Sodom. And oh, by the way, it was in fact destroyed by a fiery cosmic cataclysm that literally took it out in the blink of an eye. And not just that city, but all the cities within about a 10-kilometer radius of that site, about 400 square kilometers of civilization wiped out in the blink of an eye. And by the way, nobody lived on that piece of real estate for over 700 years afterwards. It took a long time for that well-watered land to come back because the agricultural soil was literally destroyed with this fiery event. And so it's the event I hate to say it, but how else can I say it? The event that destroyed Tal Hamam was definitely of biblical proportions. Okay. It was not a small event. We'll talk about a flood or a tsunami. They say, oh, of biblical proportions. No, this one was of biblical proportions because it literally took the entire civilization centered on the city of Sodom, took it out in the blink of an eye. And what's important about that is that Sodom, Tal Hamam, was the largest continuously occupied Bronze Age city in the entirety of the southern Levant. That means there's no larger continuously occupied city in the Bronze Age in either Israel or Jordan. This is the big dog. This is the Paris. This is the London. This is the New York of the ancient Holy Land. And it was big. It was massive. It was never conquered. We have good evidence that it was never conquered militarily. They were exactly Ezekiel 16 describes, right? They were arrogant, overfed, haughty, and did detestable things in my sight, God says about Sodom. They were all of those things, but yet, even though they were arrogant and thought they couldn't be defeated, thought they were there forever, God took them out in the blink of an eye, and he literally took them out. I mean, most of these people were vaporized, Chip. They were vaporized. And we have a couple of guys, we don't know if they're men or women, I guess, but we found a couple of them.
Yeah.
Poor Larissa. She had to get down in this. We dug this really deep trench.
That was scary.
And it's like, I think you went
there
down.
There were three ladders
once.
Worth of going down,
and,
down.
And people were like mad at me for being that deep. but anyway, we did it. But we found the southwest edge of the palace complex. And that was very important to me because now I could literally tell people how big that palace was. I needed to know where that wall was. But anyway, on that ring road between the wall of the palace and the city wall going around it, the upper city wall, we found the remnants of at least two individuals. Now I say at least two because there were dozens and hundreds literally of pieces of bone fragments, but nothing very large, mixed into this destruction matrix. Skull, upper dentition, no jaws, never found a jaw. But pieces of scapulae and leg bones and fingers and these individuals were literally ripped and torn and blown apart. Mm. They were in fragments, and so literally some people literally got blown up, fragmented, torn apart. Others were probably vaporized instantly because we're talking about temperatures in excess of, say, 10, 20, 30,000 degrees Fahrenheit for a millisecond, for just a fraction of a second, but enough, it's very similar to the temperatures you get in a major nuclear explosion.
Well, wow.
It's big. It's a big deal. Yeah. So when I present on this stuff, everybody wants to shake their head and walk out of the room, but they don't. Because the science is too compelling. Now they're trying to figure out, how do I continue to deny the story of Sodom and Gomorrah and the destruction of the city? How do I continue to hold my position on the fictitious nature of the patriarchal narratives in the face of this?
Hmm. Well,
it's interesting.
It is. And we're just honored to have you in studio. I don't want to take a break. We must take a break. This is Chip in studio with Dr. Stephen Collins and just wow. When we come back from this break, I'm a guy about stories. I want to hear you tell the story of what that last morning in Sodom could have been like, Dr. Collins. This is ABQ Connect on KLYT.
Skip Heitzig left Southern California in 1982 to head for the desert of New Mexico. The goal was starting a Bible study in Albuquerque. Let's just say it worked out okay.
So I'm moving two states away, going back east, going to New Mexico, And I think it was in a place in the Jesus movement where that was not unusual. And I thought, I'm going to go out here, spend a few months, maybe a year, and see if the Lord's going to do anything at all.
40 years later, Skip is celebrating the great things God has done. To invite you into the celebration, we're offering our radio friends a free copy of Skip's book, You Can Understand the Book of Genesis. No cost, no obligation, just a way to say, wow, what the Lord has done. From Calvary, Albuquerque, order your free book by Skip Heitzig by calling 1-800-922-1888 or go to connectwithskip.com. Get your free copy of You Can Understand the Book of Genesis by calling 1-800-922-1888 or go to connectwithskip.com. Your friends at KOYT invite you to make this Christmas special for a family in Asia with the Critter Campaign. For a poor family in Asia, getting a water buffalo is like getting a farm tractor to pull a plow, or getting a milk truck full of delicious milk, or getting a stand in the market to sell cheese. When you donate a water buffalo to a poor family in Asia, you open the door for them to provide work, food, and income. More importantly, you open the door for them to hear about Jesus. It's a special gift your family will long remember, and a family in Asia will never forget. So if you want your family to do something truly meaningful this Christmas, bless another family with a water buffalo, and you can change their lives forever. Nothing says Christmas better than that. Join KLYT in the Critter Campaign by calling 855-513-2127 or look for the Critter Campaign banner at klyt.fm.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There is still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE, ABQ Connect.
ABQ Connect, KLYT, Chip Lusko in studio with, I'm just glad to have Dr. Collins here. Dr. C, I remember, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but it's been 10, 12 years. We had lunch with Latane. And you said to me, you're staking your professional reputation on this work by what you're saying and what you're doing. Is that still your position?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can't do something like what we're doing. And this applies to every profession. I mean, you're either all in or you're not. If you really love it and you know God's called you to do that, you just got to be all in. Well, I think the biblical text, I think the Genesis text, which is the most criticized book in the Bible as far as being historical, I think it's true. I think it's accurate. And I think it's good history. And I don't have any reason not to think that. In fact, I have a whole lot of reasons to think that. But in trying to find the city of Sodom, setting the record straight on where it's located, when it was destroyed, how it was destroyed, all of that which meshes with the biblical record so perfectly, that can get you in trouble in the archaeological community. If you take the Bible seriously as history, most people in the archaeological community might humor you, but they're certainly not with you in terms of being able to believe that and accept that line of reasoning. However, it's been really interesting over the past, say, 20 years or so of this project that, and I think this is just a God thing, because what we have found in the process of looking for Sodom, we have found one of the most important cities ever discovered in the southern Levant, in the Holy Land. And nobody knew it was there before. If they had gone looking for the site, Tal al-Hammam, they might have found it, but nobody ever excavated it. Nobody ever gave the southern Jordan Valley north of the Dead Sea on the east side. Now, Jericho's on the west side of that, so everybody knows Jericho, but nobody knows anything about the other side. Well, that's where Sodom is located. And so in bringing all of this to light, we have given scholars something that they missed. How do you miss? And I always goad them a little bit. I say, studying the Levant, the southern Levant, that would be Israel, The southern Levant would be Israel and Jordan. The northern Levant would be Lebanon, Syria, just to divide that up for people. So if you're going to understand, if you're going to study the southern Levant without Tal el-Hammam, if you don't have Tal el-Hammam in the mix, this is like studying France without Paris or New York without New York City. Well, or Texas without Dallas and Fort Worth.
You're doing an extraordinary thing because, you know, a small percentage of Christians ever get to Israel. That's a big deal. But Jordan, if they get there, which is rare, it might be Petra. But a lot of the biblical story took place in Jordan.
Yeah, at Tal el-Hammam. What's interesting about
talk about the people who were at Tal el-Hammam, yeah, biblically.
In fact, it would be easier for you to go through the Bible and pick out the people who were not at Tal el-Hammam, because almost everybody was. Let's see.
We'll walk through that.
Yeah. All the patriarchs were there. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. Joseph mourned Jacob there. He brought him to the megalithic field, the dolmen field, around Tal el-Hammam. It's all these big monuments, stone monuments. That's where Joseph took Jacob's body. So they were there. Moses and Joshua showed up and stayed at Abel Shittim. Abel Shittim is Tal el-Hammam. It's that location. All the scholars recognize that. So Moses, Joshua, the Israelites, Ark of the Covenant. And Moses, it was all there.
Moses,
you know,
is buried not far from there.
Moses buried. We don't know where Moses is buried, but he's buried in the valley.
That's correct.
So somewhere around the area, Moses is buried there, you know, around Tal el-Hammam. And we're not looking for that, by the way.
Well, people are persuaded by information, but they're interested by emotion. So take us to that morning. I realize we're going to go kind of extra biblically. What was it like the day Lot escaped from Sodom?
Well, that's a really great story. And one of these days we need to write that book because it needs to be written.
Or make that movie, yes.
Or make that movie.
Yes.
These young men show up, right? And of course, they show up the night before. And they are there to escort Lot and his wife and their daughters and hopefully sons in law to be out of the city, to get his family out of the city, because they have been put in charge of this destruction. They are the guys who push the rock in this direction, right? These angelic beings, they are the ones that have been, they knew all the physics and everything they needed to know, right? They knew how to push this asteroid fragment or whatever it was, comet fragment, in this direction. They know it's coming. They know its velocity. They know how big the boom is going to be. And they have told Lot. In fact, I think they told Lot the whole thing. And he may have not understood the physics, but they told him what was going to happen, how big the explosion was going to be. And so as they grab them up early in the morning, and start to take them out of town, Lot says, "No, wait a minute. I want to flee don't make us flee to the mountains. Let's go to Zoar, which is straight shot down the Dead Sea. Let me go on the level land, because if we go uphill, that's going to slow us down. And you just told me that this thing is going to be this big, and lest we be overtaken by the destruction." So Lot's saying, "It sounds pretty big to me. Let's not take the risky route. Let's go straight down the pathway down the Dead Sea." And so that's the way they went. What's interesting about that is that the young men who were to be married to his daughters did not go. They laughed. There's a whole story behind that.
But circle back. Got to go back to the night before. What happened when the angels came to his door?
Yeah. The angels told Lot, "We're going to spend the night in the city square." And Lot said, "Stupid angels. You didn't do all the research. Not here, you're not." He told them, "No, not here. You will not spend the night. You're coming to my house. You're going to be under my roof, under my protection." So that's where they went. Well, even though they were under Lot's protection, the men of the city, young and old, it says, came and surrounded the house and asked for these young men to be brought out so that they might know them. Mm. That's the word that's used in the Bible. Biblically, yes. Know them.
Yes.
And so it wasn't necessarily meaning that they were going to do something like a rape right there at the moment. But they wanted literally to bring these handsome young men into their larger culture, into their cultural sphere, which meant to be placed in a relationship with an older male warrior. I mean, they had this whole concept. And so Lot says no, and they get upset. So they were wanting to do this this sexual perversion with them, and Lot refused, and they tried basically tear the house down.
But he kind of offered his daughters.
Oh, and he offers his daughters. Now, what's interesting about that? What's interesting? That sounds absolutely awful, but he knew they weren't going to touch his daughters.
Ah.
Because in this particular culture, and we're talking about a culture that's rooted in the island of Crete, in the Minoan culture back in the Bronze Age, that in that culture, raping a woman was a death sentence. And so he knew they weren't going to do that. Yeah. What they wanted was literally to form a male bonded relationship with these angels, which is how a warrior was raised in their society. And so he knew they weren't going to mess with his daughters because they didn't want the women. They didn't want the women.
Wow.
They wanted the men. And so it was a perversion for sure. But that was not the reason. The homosexuality issue was not the reason that God destroyed Sodom. If God would have destroyed a city because of homosexual, perverse sexual practices, he'd have to destroy the whole world. Every city in the ancient Near East, every city in the ancient world, because these kinds of practices went on all the time as normal culture. But they had a lot of other problems. That not only were they sexually perverse, but I mean, they would do things like sacrifice children, and they had just perverse religious practices. They were arrogant. They were haughty. They thought they were untouchable in terms of any kind of destruction, anything. They didn't fear anything. And by the way, it does say that all the people around the area, the Canaanites, who were even themselves sacrificing their children to Molech from time to time, it says there was a great outcry against the city of Sodom. Well, wait a minute. You got Canaanites out here who are doing a lot of perverse things themselves, so much so that God eventually wanted Joshua to just wipe them all out. But yet, they're crying out against the city of Sodom. Well, so how much worse was the city of Sodom than the Canaanites themselves? And so it must have been a pretty bad thing. It was awful. And so God had targeted this civilization for destruction because of, and God tells us in Ezekiel 16, here is why I destroyed Sodom. This is a direct quote. Here is why I destroyed Sodom. Because they were arrogant, overfed, did not take care of the widows and the orphans, and did detestable things in my sight. Kind of sounds like America to me. But anyway, he said, I'm going to destroy you.
I'm intrigued by the scripture. The angel said, we cannot do the destruction till we get you out of here.
Yes, because God always preserves his people. Now, sometimes his people suffer and die. But for God to extend his purposes in the world, sometimes God will preserve a remnant. And they were the remnant that God was going to use. By the way, he was going to use Lot and his daughters and that salacious story to actually bring out the Moabites and the Ammonites, right? The incestuous relationship was going to produce those peoples. So, yes, it was an interesting, there's a lot of interesting cultural mix going on here that takes a good long time to explain. But God had his very specific reasons for destroying this city. And I think sometimes God does this. He'll use a particular civilization as an example for the rest of the whole history of the world, for everybody in the history of the world to look back. And he will always say after this, remember what I did to Sodom and Gomorrah. As it was in the days of Lot, so shall it be at the coming of the Son of Man. So the world is going to keep moving in a Sodom direction. so to speak. But there was no way God was going to destroy that city. Now, I'm sure if Lot and his whole family had dug in their heels and absolutely refused to leave, I think God would have destroyed them along with the city. But God was, you know, God was patient to a degree, letting them be talked into it. You're going to leave. You're going to leave. In fact, it almost sounds to me like these guys, these angels, just grabbed Lot and his wife and his daughters by the hand. That's one in each hand. Four people, and whisked them out of the city.
Wow.
Said, "You're coming with us."
Well, I sure hope we have your attention now. And if you want more information on what we're talking about, Dr. Collins has co-written a book, which I find fascinating, Search for Sodom with LaTaine Scott. And that's available on Amazon. And what's the website, honey, for looking for more about the Search for Sodom?
You can go to digsodom.com. It's easier to remember than Tal El Hamam trying to figure that out. But digsodom.com will take you to the website where you can find dig information. You can find donor information if you want to support the dig. And there's information about books and everything. Digsodom.com.
Well, we need to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to pick right back up with Lot leaving and what happened to his wife. And then we'll segue, Dr. Collins, into what the plan is for January and how people can be involved either by going or sending. And great to have you here. This is ABQ Connect. Chip Lusko in studio on KLYT.
Towns Hair Service is located in West Downtown on the corner of Central and 12th. They aim to create a culture of creativity, collaboration, and care. They're accepting new clients and specialize in both color and cuts. They're looking to add stylists and barbers to their team who want to serve the people of Albuquerque, a city they love. More information at townshop.co. That's townshop.co. Thank you, Towns Hair Service, for your support of KLYT 88.3 FM, The Light in New Mexico.
A portion of the programming heard on KLYT is underwritten by a gift from David and Carol Beth Stewart of Black Bear Medicare. David and Carol Beth are both licensed, independent Medicare brokers and advisors providing no-cost consultation to educate those making decisions about Medicare plans and to clarify Medicare information seen on TV and in the mail. Black Bear Medicare, 505-363-9191. BlackBearMedicare.com, 363-9191.
At Calvary Southwest with Pastor Ray Montoya, it's our desire to love the Lord our God with all our hearts, souls, and minds, to live out, teach, and walk in the truth of God's Word, and to passionately reach people with the gospel of Jesus Christ. We hope you'll consider doing this with us. We meet Sunday mornings at 9 and 11, as well as Wednesday nights at 6:30, just across from West Mesa High School on Fortuna. Find more details at CalvarySouthwest.com.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There is still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
ABQ Connect on KLYT. This is Chip Lusko. Happy day here on the front range of the Sangre de Cristo. Don't you agree? It's a great time of year.
Beauty.
Thanksgiving week, much to be grateful for. I was just in Macedonia for a couple of weeks in Bulgaria and in Greece. I came back. I wanted to be like the Pope, Dr. Collins, and kiss the ground in America. When I saw that American flag, I went, wow, much to be grateful for.
We do. We have a tremendous amount to be grateful for. With all of her rebellion and warts, America is still the greatest country in the world.
Wow, there's no question. The word is favor. We've been given great favor, and, you know, our goal is not to save America, it's to save souls, but God's created this platform that's allowed us to propel the gospel worldwide. And that's one of the things, and of course the liberty and the freedom that goes with it, that we need to maintain.
Exactly. I think as long as the gospel is supported in a number of ways.
And Israel.
By the American culture, God will allow America to survive.
And those who bless Israel will be blessed. There's no question about that. Well, we left off. When last we left our hero, Lot, he was leaving Sodom.
I think hero's probably a stretch.
That could be a little strong. But he was being let out by the hand, and he'd been in the gates. I mean, Lot chose Sodom. Abraham gave him a choice, and he said, I think I'll go over there, right?
Yeah. And of course, Lot was, I mean, he got into a pretty comfy situation. This was a very wealthy city. And he obviously became a person of some prominence. Probably maybe the representative of all the nomadic, semi-nomadic folks who lived outside the city. Maybe he became their judge to deal with their squabbles. And so he's sitting in the city gate, and eventually he buys a house. So he has a house inside the city, which is pretty extraordinary in its own right, because only rich people in antiquity lived inside the city walls. This is the expensive real estate. So if you're just an average farmer, you don't live inside the city. So you better have some bucks to spend. So anyway, so Lot's in the city. Now he's going out. And they're headed down to Zoar. Zoar is down near the confluence of the Wadi Mujib, or the Arnon River in the Bible, and the Dead Sea. So they're going south, and they're going about 30 miles. So it's a good trek. Now, how do you do that in one day? Well, you get up really early, and you get on a donkey. They're not going to be doing this on foot. They're going to be trotting on donkeys as fast as they can move. And everybody knows the story. They start heading down to Zoar, and his wife looks back. Now, the Hebrew text can be translated a lot of variation there, maybe, in the wording. She not only turns back, I think, just in terms of glancing over her shoulder. That was not what happened. She literally, I think, stopped, looked back, and didn't go out of the blast zone. Where she stopped, everybody else carried on. She refused to leave. She stopped and turned around. But it wasn't just the fact that she was looking back that she was turned into a pillar of salt, which I'll explain momentarily. It was that she was in the blast zone, and she didn't know it. And so the blast zone encompasses that area around the north end of the Dead Sea. Lot and his daughters continued going south. So they were obviously, by going to Zoar, they were going to be out of the trajectory of the event, and they were going to be out of the blast zone. And so his wife either lingered, and maybe she even started walking back. But I think she was just on the margin of the blast zone. So when that, we know that this meteoritic explosion took place over the north end of the Dead Sea, which means it would have pushed billions and billions of metric tons of water, vaporized salt water and salt, and sent them up over the landscape. For example, the destruction layer at Tal Hamam for the period we're talking about, that Middle Bronze destruction layer from the time of Abraham, is six times more salty than the Dead Sea. The concentration of salt in that destruction layer is very high. Where did that salt come from? The event literally pushed tons and tons of this material, vaporized water, brine, and vaporized salt up over the landscape. She was standing near the shoreline on the very margins of the blast zone, and that entire landscape around her and including her was covered with a superheated, melted salt, literally, from the Dead Sea. And it covered the landscape, and it covered her. So there she is standing. Number one, the event is super hot. The water and the salt are incinerated, are vaporized, and spread over the landscape, and she's coated in salt, literally coated in melted salt. And so she's just like a little spike of salt standing in place. She became a pillar of salt. Now, it wasn't that God just pointed his finger at her and said, oh, become a pillar of salt. Boop, she became a pillar of salt. No, she became part of the event. She became coated in salt just like the landscape. And so there she was. And that's how it happened. Now, if you'd asked this question like 10 years ago, we didn't know. But now we know more about the blast dynamics of pushing this salt up over the landscape. It's easy to see that if she was standing in approximately the right place, she would have just been coated in salt, vaporized salt.
For Bible nerds like me in the audience, we're stonied in the King James by this story. We love it. But, you know, Jesus said emphatically, very short scripture, remember Lot. Remember Lot's wife. And what is that? What's the takeaway for people listening right now in the church in 2022?
I think in scripture, and just reading the story, not even to look at the New Testament interpretation of that event, but I think just being human beings, we know what was in her heart. We know what was in her mind. She longed for that more than she longed to save herself. There was something greater about the lust for the city of Sodom and what the city of Sodom, the comforts the city of Sodom had to offer. There was something more important about that than it was to even save herself or her children.
Billy Graham, Dr. Collins, yeah. Let me interject for 1 second. Billy Graham famously said, if God doesn't judge America, and this is probably 20, 30 years ago, if God doesn't judge America, he'll have to apologize to Sodom and Gomorrah, which he's not going to do.
Right.
What's your take on that?
Yeah. No, I think that's true. But every Christian has an opportunity to be a Lot's wife or not.
Mm.
Because what's more important to you? And all she was doing was making a choice. What is more important to me? And notice that it was just the longing. She may have not walked back to Sodom, but just the pondering, the longing, the hesitation trying to make the decision caught her in the destruction.
Yeah.
So a lot of people will just by hesitating, if you hesitate to come to Christ, if you're looking at the world, what do? Do I give that up? Do I follow Christ? You can get caught in the moment of hesitation. You can get caught in the moment of hesitation because all of us are only a heartbeat away from eternity.
Well, I wish we had more time, but I want to save time here for talking about what's happening in January. Your last dig season for the most part, and then many years of writing the papers and et cetera, and hopefully a film. But let's talk about the fundraiser, who's going. Let's lay out, Larissa, what's happening in the next 60 days.
Well, if you follow us on social media, you can follow Talal Hammam, Trinity Southwest University, on Facebook, on Instagram. It would be archaeology, it's escaping me right now, but you can in Facebook, you can find us on Facebook. We are going to be promoting a virtual event that we've had for the last several years now, and it's called Dig Deep. And the last 3 years, we've had Eric Metaxas with us. We have as a prize guest this year. And January 14th, you can mark your calendars. It's a Saturday evening, January 14th, 2023 at 6 p.m. We are going to have a virtual event online where Dr. Collins, Dr. Byers, and David
Breidenbach
will be sharing lots of information. In the past, we've done cooking demonstrations. We've done pottery assemblages. We've given tours. We'll do a virtual tour of the museum, virtual tours of the Ark, which is where we warehouse our pottery. And it's a very fun event. It's a fun virtual event that you can just watch from the comfort of your own home. So we invite you to participate in that. And
we're in fundraising mode.
Right.
I told Larissa before we went on the air that I prayed this morning that every person that listens to this radio program today would be only people that God selected because they were going to support the dig with some kind of gift.
Pray, give, go.
So what that means is if God has answered this prayer, that if you're listening to this program right now, that God's put his finger on you. Okay. We need you. How much does it cost to put on an excavation? This year is over $300,000.
Yes.
That's a lot of money. We have a huge team, 120 people. We're talking about airfare. We're talking about for staff. We're talking about the hotels, the food, the big lump of cash we have to pay to the Department of Antiquities just for the purpose. And we have to pay that per head. yeah. you know, per duration.
Bus rental,
but you,
gas.
You found, yeah. I want to go there for 1 second. You found great favor with the Jordan Department of Antiquities.
Well, yeah.
So far.
We have always gotten what we right. wanted. Let's put it that way.
Right.
But, you know, we have a new, we're on our 9th Director General of the Department of Antiquities since we started.
It's been 16 years you've been digging, correct?
Yeah, 16 years yeah. we're on our 9th leader.
Wow.
And I don't know this guy. And I'm not sure where he has a lot of new ideas. I know that the folks at the dig directors, Jordan dig directors breakfast that I attended at ASOR last week, nobody had much complimentary things to say about him and his mm-hmm. administration. I don't know what's going to happen to us. I think we will get our permit. They're terrible about giving permits. One of the archaeologists that was there was griping. He said, I got on the ground this summer and we were there almost 2 weeks before we could get our permit once they got to Jordan.
Am I out of line saying they don't want biblical stories to be proven?
They don't like it. No. They don't like it because if you're, their view essentially is if you believe the Bible or if you use the Bible, you're a Zionist. That doesn't sit well with most people. Now they don't anymore believe that than anything, right? They don't really believe that. It's just that excuse to take those of us who do take the Bible seriously and to make it difficult for us. So all we can do, you know, there's nothing I can do to make that happen. And I always pray, Lord, this is your baby. This is your project. Hmm. You want it to happen. You want to, whatever wheels need to turn, whatever things need to happen, you do it because I'm powerless to do it. I can't go in there and shake it up myself.
Right.
But God can do whatever has to happen. And every year for the last 15 dig seasons, we've been able to do that. And God has gotten us in there. God has done what is necessary for us to have that, have what we need.
Hmm.
And we pray the same thing this year. That's all we can do is give it over to God and get us in, get us our permit, get us the money we need to do what we need to do. It isn't good enough to have a permit, show up with 120 people and not have a permit. You know, we need the money to be able to do what we need to do. We have to pay the DOA. We have to pay for buses. We have to pay for of these things. So we need your help.
Well, we hope that will happen. We believe that will happen. I want to bring us in for a landing. Now, thanks so much, Dr. Collins. What a great time. And just personally, you know, I've been there a number of times, and the first time walking on Tel Halamam at sunset, there was no one there but our guide and my wife. It was astonishing. And now going back and watching how you work, and it is work. I mean, it changed, it rocked my world as to what archaeology was like. Wow, dig for a day? Man. And you're going there for 9 weeks now, right?
Yeah.
And you're bringing 120 people. So this story can rock the world. This has got the power of really changing the view of a lot of people outside the Bible of the Bible. Wouldn't you agree?
I would say that, yeah, absolutely. And until we're finished with the dig, which this year will put the cap on it, there are a lot of things I can't say.
Hmm.
I sit here, want to say things, and I can't say
certain
things.
We'll give you that chance next year.
Yeah, next year, right, you know, once we've laid the trowel down,
right.
Then we can speak freely. But there are just rules, international rules, rules in Jordan that keep us from saying everything but like we want to.
Well, Dr. Collins, Larissa Luskos, is Chip in studio. It's been a pleasure. It's been an honor. Back tomorrow, Steve Ryman on ABQ Connect here on KLYT.
Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.